Hello, everybody. We are going to get started. It's right at the top of the hour. And I'm going to, so we'll be talking to Alicia Forrest today, and she'll be sharing her awesome tips about hosting, planning, creating, hosting live events and workshops. And I know that many of us have been to Alicia's workshops, and we've always wanted to know, how does she do it? So she's going to be telling us today. Alicia, say hi so I can make sure I didn't mute you.
I'm here.
Woo! Alicia's here. Yay. Okay, so I'm briefly going to go over a little bit of housekeeping, and then we will get started. I do want you all to know that the line is muted. I will take, I'll open up the line for questions at the end. And then there's also, for those of you who are online, you will see that there's both a Q&A box on the left side, and there's also a chat feature. And so just so you know, I sometimes like to type into the chat from, you know, to say hello. And if you type into the chat, you will, I may type back to you. If you type into the Q&A, I can't respond to you there, but I will read out any questions or comments that come in through the chat or the Q&A. See, all of these, I'm just telling you right now, so many of these things that I do on my calls are things I learned from listening to Alicia do her teleseminars. So thank you for teaching me so many great things.
Anytime.
And for those of you, so sometimes on Instant Teleseminar, the chat fails to work or the Q&A fails to work. So I'm also leaving my Facebook page open, which is facebook.com/CoachLisaB. And so if for some reason you can't get into the chat, which has happened to me before, the chat or the Q&A, you can also go post a comment or a question in the Facebook page. And I'll be kind of checking everything in and out throughout the call. And especially if I drop off. So, you know, I'm on Skype. I call in from Skype, and occasionally Skype will drop me. So I do hope that you'll all tell me if I drop off the call, and hopefully I won't be in the middle of a long emotional story like Alicia was doing yesterday. Hopefully I'll be able to see quickly that I've dropped off. I won't tell a long story. But I'll be checking in to make sure that you can all hear us. So feel free to write into the chat or the Q&A and say hello so we know that you're here. And let's see if there's anything else I want to tell you. Yeah, that's pretty much it. If you do get booted out of the chat, refresh your browser and you should be able to get back in. And I see Alicia popped into the chat and Stephanie's in the chat. So Alicia might feel like typing in a little answer to your questions as well. And Alicia just... said hello to everybody. Okay, so our guest today, Alicia Forrest, is my business coach. So I am super excited for those of you who don't know Alicia, I'm super excited for you to meet her. I've been telling you about her for years, ever since I started following her and listening to her teleseminars. And then a couple of years ago, I finally took the leap and invested in a trip to New Hampshire for her online business breakthrough workshop. And that is, we will call that OBBW for short. And so joining Alicia's programs really was one of the best decisions I've ever made for my business. And I've gone to OBBW 3 times now, and she's been hosting it for 5 years. And I really have wanted to share with you, because a lot of my clients and a lot of the people I work with really want to do live events, but it's very intimidating. And we see all these events that are like a big show and lots of music and 800 people and 10 speakers. And it can be really overwhelming when you go to those things and then you think to yourself, how could I ever possibly do this? And mm-hmm. one of the things that I love so much about Alicia's workshops is that they're practical. There's real content material. We get real work done. But at the same time, they're fun. They're lighthearted. There are intense moments as well, as we really delve deeply into why we're doing what we're doing and, what we need to change. But so these events have this great balance of fun and learning and great energy and also some really intense moments. And I've just always wanted to know how Alicia puts these things together, because they are just so fantastic every time. So let me tell you a little bit about Alicia first, and then we will get into the interview. And Stephanie pops in and says that going to OBBW has been one of her best business decisions as well. And Barb, I got your note, and so we'll see you back when you get in your car. Okay, thanks, Barb, for letting us know. We'll talk about the free gift later, and if there's still a problem with the page, we'll figure it out, okay? But we're not talking about that yet. okay. So those of you who know Alicia, you know all of these things about her, but for those of you who don't, let me tell you a little bit about Alicia. She has an MBA, first of all. So not only does she share her own wisdom from her own knowledge of running her business for 10 years, but she actually has the educational background to back it up, which is great. She has spent over a decade of her professional life achieving excellence in entrepreneurship. And she brings all of her years of hands-on experience to help us, those of us who have online businesses, to break through our blocks and turn our businesses into six-figure mini empires. And I love that, because I think ultimately that's what we all want, is a mini empire, right? We don't want to just have a one-piece kind of a business. We really want to have a lot of different income streams and a lot of different things going on. So yes, I am growing a mini empire, as are many of you. And the most important thing is we are designing these mini empires around the life that we desire and that we deserve. And this is what Alicia has been teaching for many, many years. And she practices what she preaches. She practices what she preaches. When she says, you know, when she teaches us how to live a life we desire and deserve, this is what she's doing. She works, is it what, about 15 hours a week, Alicia?
Yep, just about.
Yeah, she works about 15 hours a week. Makes well over six figures in her business every year, and takes the whole summer off, and has two children that she is there and present with, and a husband and a family and a life. And she manages to do all this and you know, live the kind of life that she wants, working 15 hours a week. And I know many of us, if not all of us, would love to have that kind of success in our business. Some other juicy tidbits about Alicia include that she's a founding member of the International Association of Coaches, which I never knew until I read her bio, which is kind of like, that's kind of big news right there. And she types in the chat, "I am Superwoman." And then she says, not at all.
Not at all.
No, we know you are. We know you are. Alicia is also a certified teleclass leader, a multiple streams licensed coach, an infinite possibilities certified trainer, which sounds really, really cool. And she's been the marketing expert for several online forums and membership sites over the years. And by the way, she started her career as an entrepreneur when she was 12 years old, selling handmade ribbon barrettes. So there you go. Lifelong entrepreneur. And I want to tell you that her book is out now, the book that it took her a very long time to get published. Her book, Six Simple Steps to Six Figures. I'm sorry, I have a list, and this title is very hard for me to say. Six Simple Steps to Six Figures for the Solo Service Professional.
I told you I like alliteration.
I know you do. And, of course, S alliteration is the hardest one for me to say. It totally ties up my tongue. How to create your lifestyle business based on your passion for serving others. And that is now available on Amazon. And, and I just, on a final personal note, I just have to share that Alicia is not just this amazingly insightful business coach, which you're going to hear about as she talks about her events, and which I've discovered through, I mean, the amazing thing is that you can ask Alicia a question and you are so confused and so bogged down in your own head. And Alicia will just lay this answer, this clear answer out there for you. And it's like this light bulb going on. And so she's incredibly insightful. And she's also a super warm and funny and uplifting person, just as a human being. And I really, really want you all to get to know her and take advantage of, you know, some of her amazing offers and teaching. All right.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Alicia. And now that I've told you all about her, we are going to get the scoop on how she creates such successful events. So I'm going to start, and I mentioned this already, that there are a lot of these different types of events out there. And you get the feeling that the only way you can make any money at doing this is to have this giant, you know, production and to fill the room with, you know, hundreds of people and have like constant selling and, you know, maybe some content. I mean, I've been to some of these that actually do have good content, but there's a ton of selling as well. And they just feel so intimidating. So can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of events that we might want to consider doing, you know, kind of help us decide what kind of thing we might want to offer?
Yeah, definitely, Lisa. So I so appreciate you saying that, because there's nothing wrong with having one of those big production type events if that's your preferred venue, just as the host and the speaker. And that's where you like to put your energy into this, the sort of what I call the big brouhaha.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so not me, but I had to actually figure that out. And that's the first question that I would encourage everyone to ask themselves when they're thinking about doing any sort of live event or workshop, whatever you want to call it, is what do you want it to look like? So when you go to events, what are the pieces and the parts that you really resonate with, that you really enjoy? Because if you structure it and create it to be this, the way that you really show up as your best, you are going to have a blast. And I had to learn that lesson. So I don't know, even Lisa, in the years that we've known each other, if we've even talked about this, but when I first did OBBW, when I was planning that event for the first time, I had it all backwards. So I went into it thinking, I have to do a big brouhaha. I have to have the, you know, the main stage and the big production and the lights and the music and the dancing and the dancing.
Oh, God, the dancing.
We won't talk about the dancing. So, and I thought that's what you had to do. And I just appreciate what you said at the beginning about that can be really intimidating and really overwhelming. It certainly was to me. And I had a coach at the time who was putting on those types of events. So I actually had someone who could walk me through it. But it didn't matter. It still felt really intimidating and really overwhelming and such a huge investment on the front end, which is one thing that I've never done in the 5 years that I've hosted my event. I've always gone in the black, which, you know, isn't always possible depending on the time of the type of event that you're putting on. But for me to feel at peace going into an event, it's really important that my expenses, everything is paid for, that I'm not in debt or in the red before I even show up at the door. And there's different ways that you can do that, and we can certainly talk about that. But I really had to take a step back because I looked at the venues. I had the 15-page contract, of which I didn't understand a word. I had the you need to make a $15,000 upfront commitment to book the room and book the room block and all of those details. And I flat out panicked, said, I cannot sign this contract. And so that's what I did, was I took a step back and asked myself, what kind of event do I want to put on? What do I want it to look like? Well, I didn't want to hold it at the airport hotel in Boston, which is where I was. I didn't want it to be this huge event. I didn't want to make that kind of investment the first time out the gate. I had no proof that this thing was going to fly, right?
Yeah.
So it was way too scary to me. So what I did was I had that conversation with myself and a trusted colleague and said, you know what, I would just love to do like a small event in a cool town, and I don't have to worry about everybody's food preferences because everybody can go out and eat wherever they want within walking distance.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff, and I was fortunate enough to find a boutique hotel. The contract was literally one page. I didn't have to make a commitment to the rooms the first year. I mean, you know, all of these things. So that would be my very first suggestion. If you're thinking about doing your own live event, is first get really clear on what you want it to look like and how it's going to feel for you, the kind of event that you know that you're going to show up at your best in, okay? Because if you're trying to do somebody else's show, it's not going to work. And I unfortunately have seen that happen time and time again, where the imitation falls flat, and they make huge investments of money, and they don't get the return on the back end. So I would much rather see you start out small, get a handle on it, and grow from there.
That is excellent advice, and I, you know, I think this is part of the concern that a lot of us have is. Can we make money off of a small event, right? And like you say, I mean, I really appreciate your sharing that that you've always gone into your event in the black and with everything paid off. And I did make a note. This is really hard for me, by the way, because usually I'm on your calls and I get to take notes. And now I'm like, I'm actually trying to listen to what you're saying so that I can have a conversation with you and take notes for myself. I may have to go back and listen to the recording so I can catch up.
I think you'll have to.
but I am going to come, if we have some time later, I would like to come back to the question of how to go into the event with everything paid off, you know. But I'll come back to that if we have some time. But I think that the key issue here is if you want to have whatever the size of the event is, and if you know, if like probably a lot of us, we would prefer to do a nice intimate event like you're doing. And I say intimate, you have 50 people in the room, but it feels intimate every time. I wouldn't probably do more than that if you know, in order to keep the intimacy. But I think one of the key things that's happening with your events is that you have the right people at your events, right? So it doesn't matter what size it is if the right people are there. Oh, thank you, Stephanie. Stephanie volunteered to take my notes for a fee. Yeah, she's evil. So when we talk about how to get the right people, and, you know, but by right people – we mean the people who connect with us, who resonate with our message, and let's be perfectly honest here, people who might be willing and able to spend some money on what we're offering, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, we're going to be honest here. I mean, I love serving people, and I know we all do, and that's why we do what we do, but it's a business. I'm in it to make money. So the right people for me also have to be willing and able to spend money on my services and my products. So I would love for you to share with us some of your best tips for filling your seats with the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important, Lisa, what you said about the intimacy factor. If that's really important to you and you want to have that sense of intimacy, I agree, of 50 people. Because if you register 50 people, not all 50 people are going to show up. It just happens.
Right.
There's nothing personal. Life just happens. But you'll be able to maintain that sense of intimacy with that number of people. For some folks, though, that number is too high, okay? And I would think that over 50, you start to lose some of that connection. It was actually one of my concerns at OBBW this year was we moved to the bigger space, which was great, and, you know, got a little stage for me. So that was, you know, a little up-level there. But I was really concerned that I was going to lose that sense of connection with all of you by being that little bit removed. And I don't think that happened. It didn't feel like that happened at all. So, but it was something that to me is it's really a touchstone, I think, of my event, is that intimacy that we have and that open dialogue, and we're able to be connected. I'm not distanced, you know, from all of you. So that was really important to me. So think about those kinds of things too. And it's why, as far as an event goes, I choose to do a workshop style, that and the fact that I like, if people are going to come and spend 3 days with me, I want them to do the work while they're there, so thus workshop. But there's definitely those other types of events, like those multi-speaker events, and it doesn't have to be 10 speakers. It could be you and, you know, maybe two other people who complement what you do, and for some of you, doing a collaboration like that will be really boost all of your businesses and kind of spread the risk out a little bit as well. So that's another way that you could do an event. You could do an even smaller type of event if you really just wanted to start out with like 6, 8, 10, 12 people, like an intensive maybe one day, 2 day type thing, or a mastermind type thing, and just keep it really small and manageable. Just get your feet wet. That's a great way to get your feet wet, is to do that kind. Or to do like a mini preview of that. And I think, Lisa, you've probably done a number of these types where you're going in and you're speaking to a group, like a lunch and learn, or, you know, you've gotten a gig speaking for a small number of people or even a large number of people, but it's kind of a mini event, but you do have the opportunity to then invite people to work with you at some level. So there's all different ways that you can do those types of events. My preference is just to do a workshop type and a smaller one, but you can still have an event that is completely manageable and that has the results that you want to have, that is bigger, and you still don't have to do all the pomp and circumstance as well, okay? And I think the biggest part about what you said about getting the right people to come is being really clear on the type of event and the structure and the type of people you're looking for to come into the room, because sometimes when we head into doing especially the first event, we don't want to get too narrow of who we want in the room, but I would definitely invite you to think of your favorite clients or your favorite customers or people who are, you know, in your inner circle where you think, oh, if I could have a room full of Lisas, I'd be thrilled. Okay. And I'm serious.
Oh my God, a room full of Lisas would be a disaster. You can only handle one of me.
That's true. You do ask a lot of questions. No, I'm just teasing you. It's awesome. That's what I want.
That's the reason I wanted to have this interview, because look who gets to ask an hour's worth of questions all by myself. Yes.
And I love that. That's the kind of person I want in the room. I want the people to be engaged. Like, I love, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but I love the fact that because of the relationship that I work to build with my market through my online marketing, through my e-zine, through interviews like this, through invitations that I take advantage of and events I go to and meet people in person, that I build this relationship with people over time, and even previous to people actually showing up physically to the event, that when they get there, they already feel connected. So they're very comfortable. And they're, like, right away just raising their hands, answering questions. And I've been to a lot of events, and I will tell you that that doesn't happen at a lot of events. There is not a raising of hand and getting your name called. You know, there's not a lot of that, if any.
Yeah.
But really, it's about that relationship, getting those right people in the room. And there are so many ways to fill an event. So we have our little mantra of you really have to work 50 ways, and don't get stuck on a number, but the point is it's a lot. 50 ways to fill one seat, okay? So filling an event, even a small event, it definitely takes work, and it takes time. So one thing that I would definitely suggest, that if you want 50 people in a room, you need to start marketing that 6 to 8 months ahead of time. If you want 10 people in the room, still give yourself 4 to 6 months. Give yourself enough time to get those people in the room. I see that a lot where we get excited because once you make the commitment to doing an event, you get really excited. And even though it can get overwhelming with all the moving pieces, you get really excited and then you're, you know, it's like 6 weeks away. And I'm like, no way. People have their calendars booked, you know, so you got to give people at least 3-4 months before you can give them a date, especially if they're going to travel. Okay. So definitely give yourself enough time and to work as many strategies to get those seats filled as you can. Okay. So you're never going to do all 50, you know, if we're using that as a number, but even if you, you know, start working one, get a few seats. I mean, I track everything, so I can tell you that 4 people came from LinkedIn, from the invitation on LinkedIn to OBBW. You know, 17 people came from the email list. 10 people were past clients. Like, I can tell you exactly where they came from, but they all didn't come from one place, right? They all didn't come from the main list. So some of the strategies that you can use are to certainly offer some kind of early bird pricing to an event. You can even do super early bird. This tends to work well once you have some legs under you for events to say, you know, next year's event is coming up. The sales page isn't ready. The registration page isn't ready. But if you know you want to be there, you can register now super, super early for like $100, right? Just get the ticket, get it in the door. So it would definitely encourage you to do an early bird or super early bird pricing. And then on the same side, to also offer, if you're doing, if your event is $500 or $200 or $900, whatever it is to offer people payment plans. You know, make it as easy as possible for people to say yes. And those people who do take advantage of the early tickets and the payment plans, they're committed early. And so you have an opportunity to connect with them early and stay connected with them all the way up to the event by just reaching out to them, having some kind of gathering place. And that kind of parlays into what you're saying about having those right people and building that relationship and having that connection once they're in the room, is that you're connecting with them before they even show up at the door.
Right.
And that also helps them show up at the door. Because sometimes, you know, you get really close to an event and your life's really busy and you think, oh, my gosh, you know what? Maybe can I really afford to be away from home for 4 days, 5 days, whatever it is? So you want to make sure that you do whatever you can to encourage people to come, you know, to actually show up. Because if they don't show up, then you can't make them an invitation to continue with you, right?
Right. And I've heard that called a stick strategy. I think
you
may have told us that, stick strategy. So that just because somebody has spent the money, you know, made a level of commitment to come to your event, you can't just be like, oh, okay, great, you know, I've got X number of people, and then stop connecting with them and stop being in touch with them, and that you have to actually keep up that relationship building all the way up until the event, because you want people to feel welcome and part of something and excited to come even when things are happening in their life, right?
Yep, exactly. And it all happens. I mean, every year there's always a few people.
Yep.
There's always a few people every year who just, they simply can't make it because something did happen and they just can't come. So I always just roll their ticket to the next year. So if they've paid
but we're
past the refund deadline, I always just say, we'll save you a seat for next year. Yep.
Oh, I like that.
So, I want to honor that. I mean, I really want to honor the fact that they absolutely planned on coming, but life happened, and they let us know, which I always appreciate when people let us know that they can't come. And I do cut it off at 50. So I don't this is a strategy I can encourage you to use, and you can decide for yourself. One of the things that we don't do when we're doing registrations is I do cut it off at 50. There's usually a few floaters out there, like 2 or 3 people who are say they're coming, and then, you know, but they're not committed, and then, you know, they might commit, they might not, but they're kind of out there. But you can over-register. So say you want 50 people in the room, you can take 60 registrations because it is very likely that 10 to 15% of those people won't show up. Okay.
Yeah.
So that happened to me the first year, and I had a event planner who's has been doing events for like 25 years. Tell me that. You know, we were having this conversation before my event, and she said, you know, expect like 15% of those people not to show up. I'm like, are you kidding? How can you like buy a $1,000 ticket at the time? It was $9.97 and not show up. Like, that just blew my mind. And, you know, she was on the money. 15% of the people didn't show up. On the money. It was amazing to me. Now, every year, I'm happy to say, like, now we have, it's like nothing. Like, barely anybody doesn't show up unless life happens and they let us know, and then we just roll it to next year, and that's fine. But it does happen. So just want to be aware of these types of things, but it's really, like, offering ways that people can say yes to you, and especially early on, because those people will be the ones that typically do stay with you, stick with you, show up, and stick with you afterwards as well, okay?
Right.
You can also do, we do this, the bring a friend option, so it's great if someone's already made a commitment to you. And then they say, and I had one person who couldn't come this year, who something came up that just couldn't come, but she sent two friends. So it's a great way just to continue to remind people, don't forget, you can always bring a friend, you can always bring a friend. And it doesn't mean that they have to physically come with you. It's just that you offer them a special ticket, right, to give to a friend, a spouse, a colleague. We had spouses there this year, colleagues.
Yeah.
Team members, et cetera. Okay, so that's another way to fill a seat. If you're doing some kind of bonuses, deadlines, bonuses, if you sign up by October 1st, you're going to get a copy of my book, you know, that kind of thing, okay? And just, you know, make those deadlines to entice people, because what, we're all procrastinators, right? We'll take forever to actually make a decision. Like, when did you buy your plane ticket before you came this year?
Oh, God. Yeah, probably. I think I finally bought my ticket 3 weeks before, something like that. I mean, I knew I was coming, but yeah, I was like, well,
I know.
Make the plane ticket happen if I'm going to show up. But no, you're exactly right. And I think you make a good point, too. Just knowing that, say, 10 to 15% of the people who register probably won't show up, especially the first time. I think that's actually really good to know, because I know that every time I have a program, and these are virtual, I mean, all people have to do is sit at their desk and dial the phone, you know, and still, you know, I get a lot of people who say they're coming and don't, and it could get really discouraging, right? You could take it personally, you know, people don't like me, people don't value my, you know, don't see the value in what I'm offering. And I think that this actually it shows that there's a benefit to continue doing it, not giving up. If you do it the first time and you don't quite have the numbers you want, that doesn't mean that it's going to be the same next time, because now people are starting to get to know you and experience the event and tell their friends because they've been there. And so it's going to continue to grow, and you will eventually have a sort of a loyal core of people who will come. So if you do have, you know, lower numbers than you wanted, to not think that that's the end, and that it's that you shouldn't do your event again.
Exactly. That's absolutely true. And the thing is that one thing I can promise to be true is the right people will be in the room. The right people will be in the room. And people we had people there this year, this happens every year too, who missed last year, like didn't show up, and then but then came this year, like bought another ticket, and then came this year. So what you said about it, definitely don't take it personally. It is so not about you. It is so not about you. It's all about what's going on in their lives and, you know, perhaps the priority shifted or something like that. But it's absolutely not about you. So definitely don't take it personally. But the right people, who everyone who's supposed to be in that room, they're the ones that are supposed to be there that year for that particular event, okay? So just, you know, definitely take heart with that for sure. Definitely you want to give tickets if you're doing this type of event, this, you know, like a smaller event or workshop or even a larger event. You know, you want to gift your current clients tickets as well. And any programs that you're offering, Like, you'll see me do this all the time if I'm doing, you know, I do the launch logistics program. It's a 5-part teleseminar. And anyone who purchased that program, that live program, that virtual, also got a ticket to OBBW. So you can bundle your tickets in with your other offers. The one thing that I want to be clear about, though, is that you want to make sure that if you're going to be offering tickets in that way, like free tickets to clients, mm-hmm. free tickets for buying something else, you want to make sure that you're clear, not just in your own mind, but also in a written way, in a policy, or, you know, please see our page here for more details about, you know, getting your free ticket or what that encompasses or what that means. You just want to be super clear and manage expectations. Is it a free ticket that they don't, that's it, they just have it, you'll send them all the information, they can just show up and pick up their name tag? Is it a, that they need to make a deposit to claim the free ticket that then they get back if they show up, and if they don't show up, then they don't get it back? It's all a choice. Right. You can do however you want. Or is it non-refundable? So you asked me earlier, you know, how do you go into your event in the black? One of the ways that I'm able to do that is that I do require a $97. I used to call it a seed deposit, and that got people confused. So this is why I'm sharing this with you, okay?
Yeah,
it's
good,
a bonus
good.
Ticket. Deeply, deeply, deeply discount. No matter how many times they said it's non-refundable, people didn't get it. It just wasn't clear. And so it's up to me to make it clear. So we changed it to, it's a $97 bonus ticket. It is not refundable. Again, if people don't show up, they let us know, they can roll it into the next year. Like, I'm not trying to stick anybody. I do need to cover my seat costs. And that always, up until this year, that covered my seat costs. Okay, so that's what you want. You want to make sure that whatever you're paying for the room, if you're paying for the room, if you're paying for any AV, if you're paying for any food, if you're paying for printing, whatever you're paying for, divided by the number of people that you want in the room at the lowest ticket price, which for me is the $97, you want to make sure that that is covered. And that's how you can go into an event in the black, is make sure that your seat costs are covered. Okay. And so that's just a choice I've made. Other people do, you know, you could do it totally free. Then you don't have any skin in the game, so that can get a little risky. I know there's a lot of I'm trying to think of the guy who does the millionaire weekends kind of thing, T. Harv Eker, right? He has all these big, huge events, and it's free ticket, free ticket, free ticket, free ticket, free, but there's like 400 people in the room or more, and they don't require you to do anything, but it's also a very big market, right? It's very big. They get a lot of people in the space. But for us, you know, and managing our risk, ask people to give you a little skin in the game. Even if it's $50, just to reserve your seat, and if you show up, here's a check. We'll give you the money at the door. Okay, that's okay too. So it's a choice. It's a choice of how you want to do it. Okay?
I like that, the concept of managing your risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And especially for those of us who haven't done this before and might be doing it for the first time, I know after a while, after you've done it for a while, you start to get a feel for how you need to cover your costs. But for those of us who would be brand new, this is a really good example of how to do an event that doesn't have a really high upfront cost for people, but has enough of a cost that it has value to them, so they're not looking at it like, well, it's free. So, I mean, because I know, you know, when people don't pay for things, you know, they tend to have a perception of less value. So to them, there's some value to it because they paid some money, but it's not so much that it's, you know, it's going to give them a heart attack. And it's going to cover your main expenses, assuming that you will also make some sort of an offer. And so this is the next thing I want to talk about, because, and by the way, hi, Dave. Dave says that was such a cool thing about the first OBBW. That was the same one that I went to for the first time as well in 2012. He said, I knew so many of the attendees through the 21 Steps program that it was really special. And it was the same thing for me. It was the 21 Steps program that got me to go to OBBW, and maybe some other people besides me and Dave, you know, also that was may have been our first OBBW because of that. And so you go in there and you kind of already know people and you have a relationship with them because you've been part of some other online group, right? And then another thing that's really great about what you do is that you set up a Facebook group well in advance for people who are signed up for the event. So they can start meeting each other and getting to know each other and ask questions and plan. And so by the time we get there, we all feel like we know each other.
Yeah, and, you know, it was so interesting. It was such a distinction between the first year and the second year, because the first year I had the event, I didn't have the Facebook group, but you guys, you know, some of you did know each other from being in a previous program together, so that was great. So there was a little bit of that. And I think it was either the second or the third year that we started the Facebook group. But, you know, Sandra, who's MCs the event now, she's been to all of the OBBWs. Mm-hmm. And we joke that the first day, it's like we're just waiting for the ice to break. Like, oh, like it's like pulling teeth. Like, come on, guys, bond, you know. And I don't do any of the icebreaker dancing,
right,
all that kind of stuff. So the first couple of years, or the first year anyway, was like, wow, I hope the room's going to thaw pretty soon. And now you guys show up and it's we can't get you to be quiet.
Exactly.
But
it's like,
awesome.
You know, yeah, we see each other once a year. And we're like, wait, Alicia, wait just a minute so we can say hi to everybody before we get started. And
it's great.
I mean, you really have created this amazing community amongst people from your online programs,
mm-hmm,
and then bringing them together live, which I think is another reason why a lot of us would like to do our own live event, because we have these online communities. And I have people, for example, who've been reading my blog for 8 years since I started my blog.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when we all got on social media, we started connecting on social media. And some of these people I have never met in person, but I feel like we're friends. And they've been in my programs. And I'm like, God, I would love to bring them all to one place where we could all meet, you know. And so it's sort of a logical extension for what a lot of us are already doing online.
Yeah,
to bring our communities together.
And your people would love that. You know, like I said, going into this, like I had no idea if this whole live event thing was going to fly, right? I had never done one before. You know, I spoke on a couple people's stages, but only, you know, as being sort of an interview kind of thing, not just doing my own thing. And had no clue, just knew I wanted to do it. I wanted to try it. And it was the same way with offering a higher level coaching program. Was had no idea if it was going to fly.
Right.
I'm just going to put it out there. But what happens is there are all those people, Lisa, that would love the opportunity to get together in person. There are all those people, that percentage of the people that you're connected with, who want that higher level offer. So yeah, just go for it. And like I said, you can start out small, have a fantastic time, and really, you know, get your chops, and then get really clear on what you want the next level to look like.
Right. I think, nothing wrong with starting small. And I remember asking you this a couple years ago, because I was launching one of my programs, and I had three people signed up right before it was supposed to start. And I remember saying to you, oh, my God, I can't, you know, only three people are signed up. Does that make it look like, to the people in the program, does that make it look like I failed and like I didn't get enough people to sign up? And I remember what you told me. You said, oh, my gosh, when I get into a program like that and there are only three people signed or whatever, I think, good, I get more time with the coach, more personal time for me. And I thought, you know, that is so true. I feel the same way. And when I sign up for your programs or other programs where there aren't very many people, the way I see it, the fewer people in the program, the better for me because I get more time with the coach.
Absolutely.
But then there's also that balance. You want time with the coach, but you also want to have enough people where there's good interaction as well.
Exactly. That's why I love the program that you're in, because it is that interaction. Yeah. Everyone's engaged. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, okay, let's get to the, I know there's a big question that is on everybody's mind, and I know that this is something that you could do probably a whole interview on just on its own, and maybe this is even something that you talk about in the group programs, but everybody wants to know, how do you actually generate income when you do one of these events? So we've talked a little bit about ticket sales, but it does seem like the ticket sales mostly exists to cover the costs of putting on the event in the first place. And then,
pretty much, yes.
Right. So then we want to talk about, you know, okay, well, if the ticket sales are just covering the cost of putting on the event, how exactly do I make a revenue from the event? We've all been to these kinds of events. My very first live event that I went to, and I think I've told you about it, maybe some people about it. You know, we were all in chairs facing forward, no tables to write on, you know, just theater seating. And it was very hypey, but there were only about 50 people in the room, but they were clearly already loyal followers of the people doing the event. And yes, and Alicia writes in the chat, gotta have tables, and I totally agree with that, being like an education and training person. So, you know, the event was free. It was and I can't even remember if there was a seat deposit. There may not have been. It might have been just a free event. And I drove up to Northern California, and I spent the night. I spent, I think, two nights. And then their offer at the end of the day was a $5,000 offer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't expect a $5,000 offer, especially when I hadn't spent any money to come to the event or had not spent any money on their programs. I was like, wow, $5,000. And you know what? 10 people stood up and raised their hands at the end of the day and said, I bought it. You know, so again, those were like their more loyal followers. But how do you know what's the right offer to make? You know,
it's such a good question. I'm so glad you asked that question, Lisa, because I actually wasn't thinking about that when we talked about doing this interview, but that's really, really important. So a couple of things right off the bat. You want to have different levels of offers. So it could be a $5,000 program, but you also want to make sure there's something for everybody else in the room, or almost everybody, because there are definitely people who aren't going to spend money with you the first time. Maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. It doesn't matter. But, you know, you want to have more than one offer, but you also don't want to have too many, okay? But you do want to have some levels of offers. One of the things that, at this point, I have a good sense of the people in my room, right? The first year, I had no idea who's going to show up other than, you know, a handful of clients that I had invited to come.
Right.
And I knew what my pricing was at that point and all of that. And so it is a lot of work it's not a lot of work, but it's a lot of thought beforehand to really think about what is your offer going to be that you are going to make from the event itself. And one of the ways that I was able to gauge the levels of offers the first year, the second year, was by actually asking the people who were coming what they wanted. So I didn't get really specific, right? Exactly. Ask the people in the room, what would you like? So I didn't get really specific to the sense of, do you want a 6-month coaching program that includes 5 calls? You know, I didn't get that specific, but I asked who was in the room. I asked how long they'd been in business. I asked them how much income that they were making. It was all anonymous. Like, they could tell me who they were or not. I didn't need to know, but I wanted to know who was in the room, so that when I made an invitation, it actually made sense to the people who were in the room. And, of course, every year, you know, the offers have shifted and changed depending on where I'm at in my business and then also who I know is in the room, right? Because I would rather have a 45% conversion rate, which is what the rate was this year, which is really high for a live event to have that many people say yes to your offers. And that didn't include any back-end sales, like the books or products or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have, wouldn't you? You'd rather have more people say yes to your offer than have an out-of-range invitation, which happened to someone who came to OBBW a couple years ago, went off, did her own events, still does them, very successful, but had an event just recently where she made an invitation for a $25,000 coaching program. Nothing wrong with that. I've offered a $25,000 coaching program before, but did not have anyone in the room say yes, because no one in that room with her was at the level to be able to make that investment.
Right.
So she spent probably twice as much to put on the event and then walked away with nothing, if we're talking numbers. So I don't want you to do that. So that is one of the things, is I'd rather have you, you know, even make a lower priced invitation to get people to say yes, so you walk away with some confidence and you have that data to move forward with and for the next invitation that you make, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, than to, you know, again, it's that imitation of what's working for someone else who might have a whole other type of following than you do, right? You really have to tailor it to the people who actually show up physically in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is excellent advice. And I think, you know, I know a lot of speakers, first of all, who never survey the people in advance who are coming to their event. And I say event meaning, like for me, corporate training. I always send out a questionnaire, and I want to know who's in the room and what their needs are and all of that. In that kind of environment, I don't get to make a pitch because they've already paid me. But but finding out, just asking once people have registered, who are you? What's your business like? And what do you need and all of that? It just makes so much sense, because then you're tailoring the offer to what people in the room actually need. And like you say, and this is actually really, really comforting to me too, because I always feel like, oh my God, am I supposed to do some huge expensive offer? I would be much happier making a smaller offer and sort of warming people up to what I have, rather than kind of try to come up with some huge package with a dozen bonuses and all this kind of stuff and have everybody walk away, because it's too overwhelming for one thing and too costly.
Yep.
And I actually have seen that happen too, what you mentioned about the person who made the wrong offer. One of my colleagues started doing events a couple years ago, and I went to her event kind of to support her and to be a body in the room. And afterwards, when I asked her, and her offer was amazing, I was like, oh my God, I totally wish I could take her up on it. But it was actually out of my price range as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when
I asked her afterwards how it went, she said, you know what, the people in the room it was not a room of buyers, at least of that particular program. And these also were a lot of people who had been in her online programs and, you know, really liked what she had to offer. But the people in the room did not have the pocketbook, you know, for what she was offering that day. So, and she flew across the country to do this event and put a lot of money into it. And, you know, I know, and now she's been doing it for several years, and I'm sure she's worked out those glitches by now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know right off the bat, when I finally get around to doing my first event, I'm not going to make a $5,000 offer. I already know that. Oh my God. Yeah. So intimidating. Okay. Let me see what else, because I want to make sure people can ask questions, and I don't know if it's okay with you to go a little bit over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's
okay,
fine.
Because,
I just want to say one thing on what you you just said about not making that $5,000 offer. You have to be able to make, and I know you know this, but for those who maybe haven't been in that situation where they're making that invitation from the stage, if you want to put it that way, if you're making an invitation to a whole group of people at one time, is you have to be able to say the number and feel really, really good about it. Like you just, if you feel like you're going to trip over And the price of admission is $5,000. Forget it. You have to be really comfortable with the number yourself. So you can just say it and stay unattached. And at, you know what? If you're coming in, if you're making a $500 offer and you feel awesome about it, you're going to feel great making the invitation. And people are going to sense that and they're going to go, oh, my gosh, what a steal. I am jumping on. And you're going to leave that event going, woohoo, I'm so glad I did that. I'm so glad I did that. I'm so glad I didn't, you know, make the $5,000 offer. This was the feeling I wanted to have. This was the number of people I was hoping that I could work with for the next few months or whatever it is. So I just wanted to say that you just need to be, you need to be really comfortable with the number and to be able to say it with total, you know, confidence.
Yeah, exactly. When you show that confidence in what you're offering, then your audience feels confident about it, right?
Definitely.
I mean, you know, if you're uncomfortable making this offer, they're going to sense it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a really, really great tip. But you know what? Let me see if, first of all, okay, I want to open the line and take questions because I know that this is something that has been burning with a lot of our OBBW participants, I know for sure, and then, you know, probably some other people who joined the call today obviously wouldn't be here if they weren't interested in doing live events. So I want to open the phone line in a second. Just to make sure some people get questions in before we have to go. Also, everybody, don't forget there's the Q&A box and the chat if you're at your computer. But there are some people who are on the phone who aren't on the web. But I do actually want to take a quick second to have you share a little bit about your free gift. You have a special gift for our listeners, and I want to make sure everybody gets to hear about that before we get to questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually a product that I used to sell, but now that I give it away as a bonus, and it's called 101 Ways to Attract and Keep an Abundance of Clients and Customers. So it's like, I would describe it like an ebook. It's 101 ways in a checklist, but each of the ways has a paragraph or two. So there's actually some meat to it. And that, Lisa, do you have the link or do you want me to give it?
The link is on, let's see.
Okay.
The link is on the web, but the question is, can I get to that page right now?
It's aliceforest.com.
You know, yeah, I actually didn't write it down because I thought, oh, I'll just look at it when I'm on the web, and then I'm like,
yeah,
well,
no,
I didn't open it. So, yeah, go ahead and say it.
Okay, so it's aliceforest.com/gift.htm.
Yeah, we figured out that it's not HTML. HTM.
Right. There we go.
Well,
I just put it in the chat.
Okay, great. And actually, for those, so it's Alicia just typed it into the chat. And for those of you who are on the web right now, and actually for those of you who are listening, I mean, you can go back. The replay is going to be up until Monday. So even if you're not on it right now, you can go back.
Yeah.
And you'll see that there's a little link on the left-hand side of the screen that says, I think
Get
Alicia's free gift or something. So you can click on that and go there. And below that, you'll see an Audience Avenger Alliance link. And the reason I put that there is because, which I didn't even mention at the beginning of the call, but this is part of my Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series. And the Audience Avenger Alliance is a membership program that I offer, and it's a private group with all kinds of resources and materials. And I have people like Alicia come in and speak just about every month on topics of interest to speakers, but trying to not to make the topics all the same kind of thing, like how not to be afraid of speaking or whatever, trying to bring in people who are going to bring a different perspective or a different kind of angle, you know, to some kind of speaking you might be doing. So this recording is only going to be available until Monday the 20th, and then it becomes property of the Audience Avenger Alliance. It goes into our library, and only people who have a membership can access it. So that's why that other link is there, too, so you can go and look at that, you know, and see if you'd be interested in, you know, being a part of this group that gets all this great, awesome, free material on a regular basis. But Alicia's free gift link is there, so definitely go and get that, because I will tell you that every single thing that Alicia puts out is packed with content. I mean, everything that every handout, everything you ever get from Alicia is has a ton of value. So make sure you get the gift. And that reminds me, I think, Alicia, we need a handout called 50 Ways to Fill One Seat.
Exactly. I was completely thinking of that, actually.
Oh, my God. When you said that, I was like, you have a handout, right? Don't you have a handout?
I will make one. I will make one.
Okay, good. Because, yeah, that is going to be something that I can tell you everybody is going to want. So I'm just popping over to look at the questions. And, Dave's making fun of me about asking questions. No, I'm going to ask other people's questions. So if you do have questions, type them into the chat or the Q&A box. But first, I'm going to open the phone line. And I know some of you might have to go because we are at the top of the hour. And I know I try to keep these calls to an hour, but seriously, there's like so much good content here with Alicia. I knew we'd go a little bit over. So I know I think we're losing some people on the phone as we speak, but if I'm going to open up the line, and if anybody has a question for Alicia or a comment or something you want to say or ask, please feel free to jump in. I'm going to take a sip of water. I also use Alicia's tips, Alicia's tip of using a straw when I drink on a call. However, I'm using a glass straw because I'm trying not to use plastic. And so it still makes this clinking noise. So I'm like trying to keep my glass straw quiet. All right. Anybody on the phone line want to jump in? I think you are all, yeah, the line is open. So, anybody who wants to jump in, feel free. I hear you. I hear little sounds.
This is Deborah.
Let's see. What's that? Who's that?
Deborah.
Deborah. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I'm new to your community. I don't even remember how I ended up on this call. Ooh, so I need to ask you, what does OBBW stand for?
It stands for Online Business Breakthrough Workshop.
Got
it's
it.
Just so much easier to say OBBW.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for
and
asking.
I was thinking it was
I'm
online
sorry.
Business something, but I didn't know what the rest was.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
I think
you.
I said it at the very beginning, but it may have been before you logged in.
Yes,
so thanks
exactly.
for asking that again for anybody else who might have missed that.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Deborah. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you. I've had an online business for years, so it was interesting listening to this call.
Oh, yeah. We have a great community of people bonded over Alicia's programs because, you know, where else do you go to learn about having an online business? You generally can't really connect with people in your own communities because they're all kind of brick and mortar
people.
They don't
get it.
Correct. Yes. My search for community has been an ongoing problem because, I don't know anyone that I can talk business with, so it is frustrating.
Well, here you go. This is it right here.
Okay, cool.
definitely find Alicia. If you're not, are you already connected with Alicia on Facebook or Twitter?
No, with neither of you. This is totally, like I said, I can't even remember how I got here.
Welcome. Well, you are meant to be here.
Welcome. Yeah, and definitely find Alicia on Facebook and find me. And if you find me, you will find Alicia as well. Anybody else want to jump in with a question or a comment who's on the phone line? Okay, let's see. Let's go back to Q&A and back to the chat. The online business breakthrough. Oops. So Michelle asked a question, and I'm not sure I fully understand this, so maybe, Michelle, you can type in a little bit more detail. She said, how do you get coaching jobs? I'm not entirely clear on what kind of coaching jobs you're referring to. So if you could type in a little bit of clarification into either the chat or the Q&A, that would be helpful. And anybody else who's still on here want to jump in with any other questions or comments? I think Alicia gave us so much great content. I could go on asking questions, for hours, I'm sure. But this is a great start this is a really great start.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you, Lisa, for that, because there's like, you know, hours more that we could discuss about live events and all of that. But it really, you know, really, if nothing else, if it's really something you want to do, you absolutely can do it the way that you want to do it. You don't have to invest a lot of money or any, you know, if you set things up the right way. Even if you start out small and you make personal invitations, I still make personal invitations to people where I reach out personally. It's not just through email, not just through preview calls, not just through, you know, other types of events where I'm, you know, inviting people to come to the event itself. I still will send personal emails to people and say, I'd love to have you there. You know, it really simple, you know, my workshop's coming up in September. Would love to have you there. Here's the page. You know, let me know if you have questions. Hope you're well. Like, the personal touch is huge. And it's honestly, especially the first time, the easiest way to get people to come to your event, because we're so inundated, right? So many emails, so many invitations. I actually got an invitation yesterday from the assistant to a private client that I had several years ago. She was a platinum client. We coached together for a little over 2 years. She does her own events now, very successful. And I got an email from her assistant saying that this person would love for me to be at her event, that she met me in a networking meeting, and that and I'm chosen to have a special ticket and all this other stuff. And it just made me laugh. And so I just wrote back and said, well, you know, actually was her coach when she launched her business. So I'm really glad she's doing well and all of that. But it was still the personal reach out. The coach that I invested a huge amount of money with several years ago, worth every penny, her client director, whatever, reached out a few months ago. She's having an event in a couple of weeks. She said, you know, we miss you. We'd love for you to come back. And I just, it's over Halloween. And so I have two kids, and Halloween is a big deal. So I, you know, can't go. But honestly, if it wasn't over Halloween and I haven't been to one of her events for a while, and it's in Tucson, which I would love to go to again because I miss going there, I would have totally gone, but only because she reached out personally. So don't be afraid to do that as well. Like, I'm all about the automated stuff, but really take the time to reach out personally.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. And when I get those calls too, even from people I don't know, but like an, you know, event that I may have gone to before, and then, or I've signed up for it, and you know, I'll still get calls from people saying, hi, I just want to make sure you're coming and this and that. And I'm like, gosh, I don't even know you, but like, you're calling me on the phone. There's definitely something that feels very, there's something very appealing about that.
Absolutely.
To hear from a live person. And I have to say, I do not like talking on the phone, and I don't like calling people. But when I think of how it, you know, how I feel when somebody calls me and invites me, it's pretty cool. Okay. So I finally am understanding Michelle's question. Michelle, thanks for rewriting that a couple times. You said, so what you're asking is, what are the best ways to get people to hire you to come and speak at their event as a speaker or coach? So Alicia, I don't know if that's something you want to address. Is that something that you've done? I know you said you've spoken at other people's events, although I don't know if you were hired to do that or if that was, you know, how that worked. I don't know if you can address that.
Yeah, I thought happy to share my own very limited experience in this, but there, typically, like when we're talking about these multi-speaker events, so, you know, more than two, right, three, four, five, 10 people at events, often it's what we refer to as a pay-to-pitch idea. So let's just say there's this great event that has a theme that's very complementary to what I do, and I know that the 500 people in the room are, you know, my ideal market. I might want to put myself out to that host of that event if I haven't made a connection with that person already, but I can be proactive. I'm all about being proactive. If you want to do speaking gigs anywhere, is reach out and say, you know, I went to your event. I'd love to be a speaker at your next one. I've heard great things about your event. I wonder if you're taking requests for speakers, that kind of thing. But typically you're paying to be there because then you're making an invitation and there's a split of the money with the host. So it really is about being proactive, finding the events that you would love to be a speaker at, and finding out just what their protocol is. So mm-hmm. obviously that's a little bit different than if you're, you know, want to be a keynote at a conference or something like that. That's a different animal. I'm doing a couple of speaking gigs in the spring where I'm not being paid, but I do have the opportunity to make an invitation. And for me, it's worthwhile because I know that the people in the room are majorly my ideal client. So I'm okay with not getting paid for it as long as I'm able to make an invitation. And those in both those invitations, one came through knowing someone coming to my event last year who has a big organization here in my state and is asking me to speak at her annual business event. And then the other one, I'm actually not sure. I'm looking forward to it's through eWomen Network, which I'm not a member of, actually. But I'm excited to find out from the woman who runs the New England chapter, like, how she heard about me. So, because I want to make sure that however she heard about me, I thank that person or however she got my name and reached out. So, yeah.
I've heard their events are really great. That's cool.
I've heard so, too. I haven't been. so I need to get to one, so I know what it's like.
Yeah. Oh, so Michelle, thank you for asking that. I think, Alicia, I think what your main point is there is that, again, it's about relationships. It's about reaching out to people. It's about, you know, finding events that you enjoy and finding the events that fit you and have, and the people in the audience are your target audience and reaching out and asking, you know, if you're looking for speakers and how can I contribute? So that's great. And so I have another question here from Tony. Welcome from New Zealand. I have no idea what time it must be in New Zealand right now. And this is a great question. Tony wants to know if he needs to specify a specific date for the workshop in his early marketing, or can he just give the month? And then when he knows he has some numbers of people interested, then he can pick a specific day in that month. So how do you plan your dates, Alicia?
That it's a really great question. I plan my dates. First, I figure out what's going to work, obviously, for my family. I always have my event in September, and my father and my son's birthdays are in September, neither of which I will miss. So it's always not those dates. So I start with that, and then I obviously coordinate family-wise that way. And then I use the same hotel management, even though we moved to a different space, but the same venue every year, the same management company. Then David and I have that conversation of what does he have available. I'm usually super early in the process, so I usually will get the first dates that I want. So that's one thing, you know, make sure that your venue is available for the dates that you're thinking. And this is all in your pre-planning before you tell anyone, make the public dates or the dates public. So I do that first. For me, as a person who really wants to honor the fact that I know that you have to move mountains sometimes to make something happen, particularly if it requires travel, that I want to give people the date as early as possible. So in the early stages of the, hey, you know, we're going to meet for OBBW 6, you know, whatever, I'll say that tentatively the dates are September 28th, 29th, and 30th. It's tentative, but I will just at least make it clear it's tentative until I absolutely know that it's booked. So for me, it's important for both my own peace of mind and just in terms of marketing and for my market, it's really important to me to have the dates before we start getting into the full out marketing of the event and getting tickets booked and all of that. So I try to do that at least. I may know in January what my dates are for sure, and as soon as they're confirmed and I've signed the contract with the hotel, which does take a couple of back and forths, then I make sure that it's confirmed dates. People know what the confirmed dates are. But for early birds and people who, you know, are definitely going to come back, that they're okay knowing, oh, I know it's going to be, you know, sometime the end of September. They're okay with getting their tickets early. That's fine. But I know there's an event going on in Boston that I was thinking about going at the end of this month, and they just released the venue like this week. And it's the sleeping room block this week. And it's just, to me, it's like, how do you do that?
Oh yeah.
I can't just conceptually I can't figure out how they do it 2 weeks before the event. And it's a big one. This guy does these conferences all over the country in Hawaii all the time. So obviously they've got it down. It's a much bigger company than what I have. So, you know, they have a different process. But I hope that answers your question, Tony. It's really a preference, but people are going to want to know the dates before they make a commitment majorly.
Yeah, I think that's good to know because, you know, I'm the same way. I mean, if I can put OBBW on my calendar now for next year, which mm-hmm. I know you haven't got the exact dates yet, but close,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
If I know about when it's going to be, then, you know, I won't plan my own workshops during that week, obviously. I won't take speaking engagements during that week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that I know when I need to have the money for the airfare and when I need to be able to sign up. And it is really helpful, especially if you're expecting people to travel.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
That's some great advice too. And I hate to tell you, Alicia, but I really think you need to develop a new workshop just on having events. And I don't know if
I think you're right.
But, you know, this one call, I mean, we're already 15 minutes over. I still have a bunch of questions I want to ask you that I don't have time to ask you. And I'm just thinking, you know, okay, here I am giving you more work. But I bet like one of your half day, like your the business planning workshop you have at the end of the year, if
mm-hmm.
you did like a half day kind of like virtual conference where you went through the steps of planning of how you plan OBBW, and then we could all be like on the line making our own plans and planning and thinking about how we want to plan it out along with you. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be so awesome.
Yeah, it would have to be a whole day.
Or a whole day, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, those of us who have been going to OBBW for 3, 4, or 5 years, and even other people who are on this call who haven't been to your events yet but who want to do this, you know, I think a lot of us now are at the point where, okay, now I need those steps. What are the steps? Like, how do I make this happen? How do I create this? So sorry for asking you to do more work and create more programs, but you know, your audience needs it from you. They need it.
I agree.
Okay, I need to let everybody go. I realize we're over time. Before we hang up, I want to remind you all of Alicia's free gift. If you're online right now, you can click on that. The link, it's aliciaforrest.com/gift.htm. Oh my God.
Yes.
It was right in front of my face and then I got kicked out of the chat. Great. And then you can click that link. Also, aliciaforrest.com is where you'll find Alicia, and you'll find her on Facebook and Twitter as well. And she always tweets out and posts on Facebook really great links to just a ton of articles about running your online business. So I do recommend that you follow her, her page and her Twitter. And I will be sending out the links. I will also send out the link to Alicia's free gift in the email. So I'm going to send an email out to everybody who signed up for this. A lot of people aren't on the call right now because they had other things happening, but we have the recording that will be going out right away, and I'll also put the links to Alicia's gift in there and to her website. And just as a reminder, this recording will be available until Monday, October 20th. So if you didn't catch the whole thing or you want to come back and listen again, like I'm going to have – I have 3 pages of notes, and that was with me talking half the time. It will be available till Monday, October 20th. So thank you so much, Alicia. I'm gonna drop everybody else, but I'm hoping that if I did this right, I can keep you on the line for a sec.
Cool.
And everybody else, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate your time, and I hope you got as much out of this as I did. I mostly just feel super inspired now and more motivated than ever to have my own event. So thank you so much, Alicia.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, hang on. I must end.